it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Matthew is here. Before we talk purple with Matthew from Purple Insider, we are about to get another press conference involving the killing of Charlie Kirk, but officials just in the last few moments have postponed a news conference due to rapid developments in the case. As soon as we see any of that break, whether right from Utah or elsewhere, we will certainly let you know, even if it's in our conversation here with Mr. Collar. Check out Purple Insider. I'm on it right now. Vikings 1-0 after the win against the Bears. And now they get, well, Kirk Cousins will be on the sidelines, but they won't see him as a starter. Michael Penix and the Falcons coming to town. Another nationally televised game, Sunday night. Matthew, always a pleasure, sir. I'm looking at your story. I looked at it earlier in the day. Vikings superpower is on the sidelines. And, Matthew, I must have watched it four times on various media outlets with individuals contending if they could pick one coach for now and for the future, one head coach for now and the future, the guy they would pick is Kevin O'Connell. Is that hyperbolic?
It's not hyperbolic. I think, of course, there's a guy out in Los Angeles with great style and hair who has won a Super Bowl and beat the tar out of Kevin O'Connell last year that I think I would pick number one overall. I mean, give me McVay as the best coach in the National Football League. And then, you know, Kevin O'Connell's in the conversation. Of course, there's the legends category with, like, Tomlin and Andy Reid and those guys that are, you know, they know how to do the job and they're great. And if you have a Super Bowl, then you're ahead of Kevin O'Connell. But I think if you were drafting all coaches for the next 10 years, that you're picking O'Connell very high. And one of the reasons is exactly what we saw on Monday night. I mean, there are, you know, O'Connell joked yesterday about, you know, I know people want to see me throw a Gatorade cooler or kick over a bench or something. He's like, that's just not what wins football games. And he has this calmness to him in the moment where it's like, all right, you just threw a pick six. How many coaches after their quarterback threw a pick six would bring the quarterback over and say, hey, great job on that protection. You made the right read. You got a bad break. The guy made an unbelievable play. Get back out there. Let's go. How many coaches would say that? How many, and one, how many coaches could I identify in the moment? Because he was actually absolutely right. I mean, I watched the tape back, and I watched what former Viking quarterback JT O'Sullivan had to say about it. It was just like a shockingly good play where that guy completely sold out for only one result, and he got it. But how many coaches would realize that and say that? I mean, I would throw a Gatorade cooler. I saw a few reactions online of people who were not keeping their cool after that. But the fact that they have not only O'Connell, but Aaron Jones, T.J. Hockenson, Justin Jefferson, Brian O'Neill, all these guys who have been through these games. I mean, these guys were part, some of them, of the biggest comeback in NFL history. They've kind of seen it all. And I think that there is a calmness that starts with O'Connell and trickles down to those veterans that makes it a very friendly environment to a quarterback where you never feel like that quarterback thinks that it's kind of him against the world out there. And we really saw the result of that with J.J. McCarthy on Monday.
Are there times where he does light these guys up? Or is it pretty much what we see is just who he is on a consistent basis? And in amplifying what you said, that's the superpower. That they're not surprised. They know what they're getting. They know the belief. And they're not waiting for the shoe to drop where all of a sudden he's screaming at them like probably 95% of the other coaches they've had throughout various parts of their career.
I think that behind the scenes in the film session on Tuesday, some paint probably came off the walls. I think that behind closed doors, Kevin O'Connell will push the gas pedal down when guys need to hear the message. Now, these are veteran players, so when they do something wrong, they're usually going to know. But I like the way that he framed it yesterday, where he said, when I asked him what happened in the first half, he said there was a lot of stuff that was not up to their standard. And then when you watch the tape back, they're running routes where two guys run into each other. That's not going to help your quarterback. What the hell is that? Like, that's not something that you ever see from a Justin Jefferson and even a player who's been around like a Jalen Naylor. It was not just the quarterback who was freaking out a little bit in that environment. There were multiple people who were not their usual selves in that first half. And I imagine that the tape session was pretty harsh, because if you keep playing like that, like they did in the first half, then you're not going to win very many football games. But I think it speaks to just the team in general, that they could lock back in and find a way. And it speaks a lot to J.J. McCarthy. And I also think that when we evaluate McCarthy, you could say, oh, he played terrible in those first three quarters, and you'd be right by the numbers. But when you actually go back and watch it, you're like, he didn't make a lot of bad decisions. They actually just played badly. And there is another team on the field that has a pretty good coach named Dennis Allen defensively, who threw stuff at them that they had not been able to prepare for. And I think that threw off the entire team. So they're going to have to play a lot better against Atlanta, but I also think that they learned a lot about themselves by pulling out a win in that game.
What was your read on the number of plays where they had the delay game a couple times, I think. They were down to the clock with a 2-3 on a regular basis. And also, and I thought he improved on this greatly, I just thought there were a number of plays, Matt, in the first half where when he gets to that set position, when especially in the O'Connell offense, you're expecting the ball is out, where I just thought it took him a little bit of time in that area. What about those 2 points in evaluating McCarthy?
So I think we've seen this from all Vikings quarterbacks with O'Connell, that he gives them so many tools at the line of scrimmage that sometimes it's a little much. And even last year, Justin Jefferson went to O'Connell after one of the games where they had two or three delay of games and just said, can you cool it? Like, can you pull it back a little bit? And my guess is that he had a lot on JJ's shoulders. And in practice, he probably got it all right. And then the F-18 jets flew over and the national anthem played and the ESPN cameras turned on. And it's a little bit scary out there, man. You could say all day long that, oh, well, this guy played in college. That's fantastic. It ain't nothing like this. And I think that was a good experience for him, but I also think, like, that was more J.J. nerves than anything else. And that, I think, will not happen probably again to him. What was the second part of the question?
Just the idea that I thought there were a number of plays in the first half where – when he gets back in that set position, when him to make the decision right there and throw the ball, it just, and maybe that's just unavoidable. It's the kid's first game, as you just said, but I thought that ball came out with some alacrity in the second half, whereas the first half, you're like, okay, you just planted the foot. This is the time you have to make the decision, including when a guy named Christian Darrisaw is not playing in the game.
Yeah, and so I think that that was part of it, is that Justin School was being beaten pretty badly, and that's what we saw in camp, all summer. Was just, I don't think that he is of the ilk of previous quality swing tackles that they've had, like Rashad Hill or even David Questenberry. I think he's a step down from that, which is kind of barely playable. That was a huge problem. I think that sped him up, some of the quick pressures, or at least, you know, maybe cause them to run a little bit faster. I do think that some things, see what happens a lot is something flashes open in like the blink of an eye, and we're sitting at home like, throw it, stupid. Like, what, you know, but, yeah, but then right. When you look, like, when was the, how long was the actual window for him to pull that trigger? And it's, 0.001 seconds. And that, I think, went along with the nerves a little bit. I also think that KOC was trying to ease him in with short stuff. And then with the Naylor play, it was almost like they all went, oh, yeah, that's right. Like, KOC's offense is downfield. This kid's got an arm. Like, let it go. And he said after the game, I asked him if there was a particular throw that kind of got him going. And he said that one at the end of the half. Then he felt like, all right, you know, I can make some throws. But you're right. Like, this is inexperience in the NFL. Like, this is why he's got to play. And it's also why everybody, if you're on the internet during these games, if he has a bad quarter or something, just get away from the keyboard. My gosh. I mean, it's just way too much, you know. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. You should have got Rodgers.
No, Ben, come on.
There's going to be times like this, folks. That's why they paid so much money for the defense.
So, again, this Matthew Collar from Purple Insider, an absolute must when you're paying attention to the Vikings. I'm on it right now, purpleinsider.football. Check it out. So in the last half hour or so, the Vikings added a wide receiver and a tight end to their active roster and added a cornerback and a linebacker to the practice squad. They have Jeff Okudah, who was one of the starters, a cornerback, like Andrew Van Ginkle in the concussion protocol. They have some options. Now, if all of a sudden they're down Blake Cashman and Van Ginkle, that's a significant loss to that linebacking crew, and clearly Van Ginkle is more than just a linebacker. But I haven't understood the four cornerback situation the entire time. If Okudah's out, are they actually going to play this game with three cornerbacks on Sunday night?
No, they won't. They did sign Fabian Morrow, who's been around and was on the team last year. And it's really unfortunate with Okudah. He got hurt on the last play of the game. It was just a bad break for him. But, you know, they have a veteran on the practice squad, Fabian Morrow. They have Zamaya Vaughn, who they were really high on during training camp, is on the practice squad. But the other thing is that they've got guys with some positional flexibility. So this is more of a three-safety defense than anything else. And Tavier Thomas is kind of a special teamer. He played nickel corner for over 1,000 snaps in his career. Josh Metellus has played nickel corner a ton during his career. So I would expect to see the three safeties. And what, you know, could be dependent a little bit is whether Harrison Smith comes back. Oh, I should also mention Jay Ward, who was a fourth-round draft pick from 2 years ago, who played really well in a dime package in that game late in the game at safety. He did a really good job when I was reviewing the game. So, you know, I think that they've got a bunch of safeties in a deep safety room that's probably going to make up a lot of the difference. But it's not ideal because if one of those starters goes down, then you're talking about, you know, Dwight McGluthern, who's an undrafted free agent, or, you know, Fabian Morrow, who you're bumping up from the, you know, from the practice squad. It's not really where you want to be. And I think that what they're trying to do is kind of get through this first part of the season and then see if any options shake loose at corner, because when everyone says, why don't they just sign a corner? You're like, oh yeah, you know, there's a lot of them available on September, you know, whatever. Like, it's not usually how it works. So they might have to wait until the trade market starts to open up a little bit.
Okay. So let's talk about the Falcons. The Michael Penix, Kirk Cousins decision obviously was analyzed most in Atlanta, but probably second most up here because of Kirk. What's your view of Penix right now and the challenges he'll present on Sunday night?
I am a huge fan of Michael Penix. I think the guy is a warrior. I think he's got an incredible arm and a pocket presence that's unlike what you see from most young quarterbacks. I mean, this guy, last week Tampa Bay was throwing it all at him, took zero sacks in the game. He threw two balls that should have been caught at the end of the game by his receivers, and then his kicker missed. I mean, the guy should have had, you know, a game-winning drive there and didn't get it. Because the team let him down. And I've just been so impressed with his arm talent, his poise as a young quarterback. But this is U.S. Bank Stadium, and inexperienced quarterbacks tend to struggle. Also, a thing to really watch is Drake London. His status is up in the air. He's one of the best receivers in the NFL. Yeah. And that team is not deep with wide receivers. It's kind of him, and then they throw to the running back at tight end a lot. But I'm really interested to see, because I think they're going to try to send a lot of blitzes at Penix early and just see, hey, how are you going to respond? Because this atmosphere is going to be insane. I think this will be one of the loudest opening drives that we've ever seen U.S. Bank Stadium, considering the hype around this team right now. So I'm interested to see it, but I think Penix is going to be a really good quarterback.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it. Go talk to the coordinators, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Chad. Appreciate it.
Mr. Matthew Collar, Purple Insider, purpleinsider.football. Check it out right now.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
As you know, 24 years ago, we were attacked. We were attacked in New York. We were attacked the Pentagon. We were attacked in Shanksville. 9/11 took place. The ceremonies once again this morning at the locations already noted, including the president and the first lady at the Pentagon. Dave, I think it's very notable, considering we're talking about all the extremism that is taking place in our country right now, with just the vitriol, with the words from those on the far right, those on the far left, those who will text us. By the way, let's never downplay the number of intelligent, smart, considerate, and opposing views we get here, which aren't just harsh and absurdly, factually inaccurate. But in getting back to the extremism, which is an enormous issue in this country, and I'd love to say this is going to be the tipping point. I'd love to say the murder of the Hortmans would have been a tipping point, or the murder of two children praying, or going back to when Steve Scalise and other members of Congress were attacked, or Gabby Giffords. But our extremism is only getting bigger, and it's only getting more stark and only separating us more. And we're playing a part. And another part of that, too, is the fact that we're now down to about 50 races in Congress where there's actually a debate whether a Democrat or a Republican is going to win. So because now it's really a battle for the primary. Can you be far enough to the left if you're a Democrat? Can you be far enough to the right if you're a Republican? And I bring this up in relation to 9/11, because what was 9/11 about? Attacking us for individuals who had an extremist, hate-driven, perverted view of their faith and wanted to come to our country and kill as many one of us. So their extremism, their hatred of us was an enormous part of 9/11. And now we have so much extremism that is just a regular feature in our country, which is a sad, sad statement. But when you think back to 24 years ago, what stands out? What stands out, not just on that day? If you want to talk about the day, you certainly can. We always look at that. I'm more interested in what has happened since. I say this often, Dave. I'm incredibly thankful to the tens and tens of thousands of people who have been a part of our intelligence, who have prevented another similar type of attack on our soil. I'm not saying we haven't had attacks, but God knows how many attempted attacks that we have stopped. The airline experience itself, do we feel like that has been too much? It's hard to say too much, Dave, when I just pointed out, if you would have said to most of us, considering what we would learn the days after September 11th, and you would have said 24 years later, another attack like that has not taken place, I think, Dave, a lot of experts would have said, I don't think we can be that fortunate.
Sure.
This is such a tipping point of change. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people, when I fly, it seems like a lot. But considering that was such a method, I think there are too many people end up just complaining about that when you just shut up and actually pay attention. Dave, when you think about other let's do this. Let's pause. When you think about the 24 years since 9/11, what has happened, what hasn't happened, and if you want to talk about that day, what is still most indelible to you, I think it's still worth it every single year when this comes up, that we do not let this slide by without an extended conversation, and that includes all of you. If you want to call, you certainly can. If a text is easier, we certainly look at a lot of texts and read a lot of texts all throughout the day, every single show. You can text right now, in fact, 651-461-9226.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's get a little more feedback on 24 years after 9/11. I mentioned the awful extremism which was used to attack us, a perverted view of their faith, and that extremism going after us, and all the extremism that's all throughout our country right now, and what an epic failure that is. And just your thoughts, what first comes to mind either on that day or about what has happened since, among the texts, and would love more, 651-461-9226. Think about the cost of all the security and the related cost in total dollars. That did hurt us a great deal. There's no denying that, Dave. It is a staggering figure.
So
when you think about, I mean, the money that we spent, not just on air travel, but in so many other areas because of what happened that morning of September 11th.
There was a story just earlier this week about how just preventing school shootings has become a $4 billion industry,
yeah,
and that number's
right.
Not going down.
No, no. And that pales in comparison to the true amount of money we've spent in relation to 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 9/11, I'm always going to think of in the days after, the family members who are holding up a sign, often with a picture of a loved one, hoping really for a miracle. Have you seen my wife, my husband, my boyfriend, my coworker? And how some of those folks, Dave, just went down to that site, to the Trade Center, and just went there day after day after day, hoping somehow someone would appear. And there were those very rare occasions when that took place, but that hardly ever happened. And you can't fault a soul for wanting to see someone. It was just impossible considering the force of both buildings coming down.
Yeah, and then just the shock and grief of somebody that knows probably in their heart that their loved one was in that building, but you can't fault hope.
What else stands out to you when you think about 24 years after 9/11?
The day of, I was a senior in high school, just starting my senior year, so I mean, it was a day of what in the world is going on, and just to me being awakened out of, you know, that kind of school age naivete I still had of, wow, there's people that really hate America out there. I had probably heard of Al-Qaeda, but didn't really know much about it. And, you know, just losing a lot of a lot of being just a child at that point in that day. As you know, I couldn't take my eyes off the coverage and the absolute horrors of seeing people, you know, jumping out of the buildings and all the things that we've seen that day and in the last 24 years. And then, and fast forwarding today, you talked about the extremism. How many times did we hear and discuss the term, you know, Islamic extremism? That's what caused these. You know, that's mm-hmm. what Al-Qaeda is all about.
War on terror. Right?
Yes, exactly. And man, we've just brought extremism home. We've done it in 24 years.
Yeah.
And,
right.
You know, at that point, right after 9/11, we feared for our safety because of attacks coming from outside our borders. We feared for more terrorism, whether it was hijacking planes, bombing, whatever it is, you know, things that struck, you know, in Europe, certainly, with plenty of acts of violence there.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
And we're just, you know, are we safer now because instead of, you know, or because we've been able to, you know, block attacks or, you know, mitigate a sorts of terrorism coming from outside our borders. But now we've just traded that for what's happening inside our own country with our very own people. Are we any safer? I don't know.
Among the texts, and I appreciate those coming in, 651-461-9226. In the months following 9/11, no one was a Democrat. No one was a Republican. No one was black. No one was white. We're all simply Americans working together. That is 1,000% correct, and it went away way too quickly. You know, you think of those moments that were both symbolic, Dave, and meaningful involving the president of the time, George W. Bush.
How could you not think of him with the bullhorn at Ground Zero?
100%. Exactly. That's where I was going first.
They're going to hear from all right of there. Us soon. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. With the one gentleman right next to him.
Yeah.
Right? And that is where W, as well known as he was throughout his life, seemed to be very at ease around people and fit that moment. He fit the moment at the ballgame. He just did.
Mm-hmm.
At Yankee Stadium, of all places, when he goes out there, and I know it's just a minor point, but I think the country was saying, yeah, that's our guy who just threw that strike right there.
Yep.
And then to me, by far, his greatest speech ever was to Congress a few weeks later. And he met the moment. He won 1,000% met the moment. And there was just a lot of debate on what we should do before the divide, right? And I do think for the first month or two, this country was willing to do more. And I wish we would have come up with more collective things that we could have done to try to stay together more. Because what was it, about a month later or so, with the invasion of Afghanistan, and there was, I don't want to say unity, we're a country of well over 300 million, but that seemed to make sense. That's where Al-Qaeda was. This is where this country's harboring bin Laden. Let's go there. But then the push became from the neocons to lie and try to tie Osama bin Laden to Iraq. There was zero connection, none, zero, zilch. This was a lot of those folks from Wolfowitz, from Rumsfeld, from Cheney, who were mad at George H.W. Bush for not taking out Saddam Hussein. And we quickly pivoted there. And I know there still will always be a perpetual debate, Dave, on the intelligence, because I talked about in the first segment how outstanding the intelligence has been to prevent further attacks. And there are still W opponents, and it wasn't like I loved every decision W made. To be clear, I did not. But there are still many people believe that the evidence was cooked. They were just flat out lying. Well, if they were lying, so was Tony Blair. If they were lying, so was Bill Clinton. So was Hillary Clinton. So was John Kerry. So were numerous Democrats and other people across the planet who believe that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. But what he did not have was any tie to 9/11. And that added to the splinter. Then the very casual way the overall shock and awe plans were great. But then our lack of understanding of the Sunnis and the Shias and Dick Cheney out with Tim Russert at one point said they're going to greet us as liberators and mission accomplished. And what an absolute quagmire that became. And we just lost that uniformity so fast. And that's why so often at the Fan and then here for so long, I said the next attack, I just didn't buy that we would stay together very long. And you know the next major attack? It was COVID. And how long, Dave, did we stay together on COVID before we were finger-pointing? And now it's turned into an entire thing of, well, where the commander-in-chief who was behind Operation Warp Speed, where he wants a Nobel Peace Prize. I mean, he wants a Nobel Peace Prize for winning 17 club championships. Just give him the Nobel Peace Prize so we can move on, by the way. But that was a remarkable accomplishment. And then because the vaccines did not live up to all the hype, they did not, and that some decisions were made that turned out to be incorrect, some words that those of us, including me, offered up were not correct. Now it's turned into hatred towards vaccines from so many people, Dave, and that's divided us further.
Oh, yeah.
And even on a day when Charlie Kirk, again, you don't have to agree with Charlie Kirk's positions. You just don't have to. But when this is your point to somehow say he's evil or to somehow take joy, you really think this is the way to bring the better angels back to our country? When a person is having a debate on a college campus and this is your moment to be pleased about what happened, that is vile and that is awful.
Yeah, at least Charlie Kirk was willing to have debate. He was outspoken. A lot of people disagreed with some, all, everything, majority of what he said, whatever it is. A lot of people completely had great disdain for his position on a number of issues, but he would be willing to go out there and have a civilized debate to explain himself, to let people explain themselves, to try to convince the other person why they should look at it the other person's way. But we don't do that. You know, not enough people do that. Far from enough people do that, because now we just get to the point where in this country, the partisan divide is there, the ideological divide is there, where if you know somebody is on the other side of you, no matter what they say, sky is blue, doesn't matter, they're wrong, and I will find a way to scream from the rooftop that they're wrong, whether I have actual evidence or not.
Yeah. In fact, we see that constantly in politics, show after show after show, where you used to have access to various politicians who would come on and engage in questions, engage and follow up. You know what they do now? Nah, I'm just going to find a place where it's warm, comfortable, and safe. And that's another part of what Kirk wasn't doing. When Charlie Kirk's going on with Gavin Newsom, you think they're going to agree a lot? When Kirk's going on with Marr, he's going to agree more, but he was willing to do that. And too many of our damn politicians are public political cowards about the debate. Not real cowards, but the political back and forth that should take place, and they end up getting rewarded for it. And I thought that we would have learned our lesson after 9/11 on that. No, because the extremism is extraordinarily higher in our country now than it was then. You want to keep chiming in through the text? You certainly can. 651-461-9226. I'm going to talk right now about my friend Amber Scholl, an American Family, and how helpful they can be. Yep, as I said many times before, when I moved back years ago, I went with this office. This office has been very good to me. Amber was not with the office then. She's been with it 15 years. She's running it now very efficiently the last few years. How do you track down Amber? Through American Family? Yeah, there's a 1-800 American Family number, but it's way better if you have a local office where you have Amber. You have her team, where if you get in a car accident or a tree falls somewhere in the yard or it's hail, whatever it might be with your car and home insurance where there's a problem, or you're just calling and ask, do I have the best rates? That's what you can do when you reach out to TeamScholl.com. It's S-C-H-O-L-L.com. Don't hesitate. Have the conversation. You'll either come away feeling better about the insurance you have or saying, hey, Amber, how can you write up a new program for me because I'm switching to American Family? Track them down. TeamShoal.com. Among the comments coming in on 9/11, Chad, I lived in Minnetonka since the mid-80s. One of my most vivid memories of 9/11 was leaving my office around noon, as I literally had no idea to do next at work. But on the way home, I remembered we had a local election on that Tuesday. As I walked into the elementary school, which served as our voting place, it gave me such a feeling of confidence and pride, knowing we were all going to get through this somehow. Even with the recent events, I still embrace that hope. That's a beautiful message, Dave.
Yes, it is.
I want to see more people follow those actions and not give up that hope. Because I think there were so many people, I mean, obviously in the three locations who were running for their lives, or their lives had been ended, or you're wondering what happened to a loved one, a friend. But for those hours on that day, it was, what's next? Is this done? What does this mean to our country? And to have a part of it, Dave, where it's a part of your civic duty, something that's core to who and what we are, I think that's a beautiful day, or a beautiful way to be a part of just a disastrous day, right?
Yeah, absolutely is.
Another one. I was a therapist working at the VA at the time of 9/11. My dad was trying to console hospitalized veterans, many who were World War II soldiers. There were tears and fears on their faces and the minds of veterans because they knew what such a horrific act might portend. Another war. We also had a bomb threat called into the medical center, and I was called in to look for the bomb, even though I had no idea what it looked like. It was a day which, for obvious reasons, will be etched in my memory. I can't fault that person at all. All right, next hour, we're getting back to the rhetoric. We're going to talk about the rhetoric from some of our leaders. Do we think it's going to change? Do we think our rhetoric is going to change? So we're going to talk more about the assassination, the murder, the public murder of Charlie Kirk. But also at the bottom hour, we'll have some fun with Am I Wrong? CBS and Ari coming up next.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.